Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday at 11 a.m., we have a conversation with some fascinating person about the most fascinating subject, and that is taste. And before we have that conversation today, I want to remind people listening that the reason that we can be here and have these sort of esoteric conversations about food almost 24 hours a day on Heritage Radio Network is because of members like you. May is membership month, as you heard in the call into the show. And we want your support so that we can continue to bring you these incredible conversations, things you can't find anywhere. They're not in the food magazines. They're certainly not on Food Network. They're not even in your favorite food blogs, because we actually have the people here with us in the studio. We go out into the field, and Heritage Radio Network is dedicated to bringing you the cutting edge of food radio. So go to heritageradionetwork.org, join today. It starts at $60, and become part of the revolution that is happening all over the world, not just here in America. And someone who's been on the forefront of that revolution in America is sitting with me in the studio. I'm a little nervous. I don't get nervous much, but Danielle Ballou, arguably the greatest chef we have had the fortune to have in New York City among us, certainly the greatest ambassador for New York and for American food, not just here, but around the world. You can go to France, you can go to Japan, you can say the name Danielle Ballou, and people know who you're talking about. That is an incredible, incredible place to be, Danielle. We're so honored to have you here.
Thank you, Mitchell. We go way back, actually. You talk about Japan, and we were together
there
15 years ago.
In college, I came into the kitchen when you were at Le Cirque, and for two days, I peeled carrots and watched you just run the most incredible food show I'd ever seen then, and you continue to do that every day for the last 30 years.
It's true, you're a Cornell graduate, and I remember when you came, yeah?
Yeah, it's true. So you, in the midst of the Beard Award craziness this weekend, you had a celebration that I think deserves to be talked about because it was the 20th anniversary of Restaurant Danielle, and to have a restaurant that's on the top of its game for 20 years is a milestone few ever get a chance to celebrate. And not only are you at the top of the game, but you are still among the greatest restaurants in the world, number 29 on the list of the 50 greatest restaurants in the world.
Thank you.
How do you do it? I mean, how?
Well, it's not me how I do it. It's also with our team. And interestingly enough, to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Danielle, this Sunday, we wanted to do a half street party and half in Danielle celebration as well. And so we blocked part of the street and we had a different stand. I wanted every chef from every restaurant I have. So there was, of course, the chef Gavin from Café Boulou, mm-hmm. Chef Aaron from Boulou Sud, Olivier from Bar Boulou. We had also Chef Alex from DBGB, Chris from the Épicerie Boulou. And we have also the chef of DB, Laurent. Everyone participated, the charcutier as well.
It was amazing. I mean, at one point someone said to me they had images of Rome, of the fall of Rome. That they, I mean, I felt like we were on the SS France in 1974. That's about funny. To set sail. It was the most incredible celebration. And the sort of thing that everyone there agreed only you could do, only you would ever dream of
well,
doing.
I think that day we served maybe, I don't know, 80 different dishes. Or 60, because everyone was doing 5, 6, 7 dishes.
To how many people?
And,
hundreds of
about,
people.
About, 600, 700 maybe. So it was a lot of fun. And to me, I think it's celebrating, of course, those 20 fantastic years here in New York. But I think we have been blessed in America to be a little bit of the forefront of country changing mm-hmm. and evolving and it has been a constant evolution. And
so let's talk about that. I mean, it would be hard to imagine 20 years ago that you and I would be sitting in a shipping container in Bushwick, Brooklyn, attached to one of everyone's favorite restaurants here, where no one
Roberta,
20 years ago would have
absolutely.
Ever gone. Certainly. So, what have you seen? I mean, you came to America with such an incredible food knowledge, obviously your upbringing near Lyon, but what have you seen change? I mean, you've been at the forefront of it, but you've also been in the midst of it.
Well, I think what I've seen change is certainly the younger generation getting a local education as well. Many of the chefs who made what New York is today had a stronger European and international background. But you see a lot of young American chefs today who are really doing their tour of America rather than tour of the world and France. And you know, they are born in Cleveland and work in San Francisco and move down to the South and come back to New York. And I think every region is bringing something today.
And do you feel that change on the other side, from the consumer side in your dining room? Are your diners smarter? Are they younger? Or do they get out
more?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. And I think the younger diner has always existed, but I think it's very... Everybody is well informed today. Mm-hmm. Everybody is well prepared to where they go and why they go to a place. But I think also their knowledge of food. There is more and more many ways to be well educated about wine, about food, about farmers, about ingredient and mm-hmm. Technique.
We are indeed very fortunate.
The cooking school, for example, have evolved a lot also, I think, mm-hmm. and give a good understanding for beginners on what world they're getting in.
And that's interesting. I imagine you did not. Did you go to cooking school?
No.
Yeah. Did anyone in France go to cooking school?
The cooking school I went, I stayed 3 weeks because it was so bad. Then it was worse than, I mean, the cooking at home was always fantastic.
Right.
I thought maybe, you know, being in a cooking school will be such an elevation from home. It was just degradation.
Right. And yet, so today, though, you would expect a young cook to have at least completed a degree of some kind in cooking school. Do you think it's necessary?
I think it's necessary. I think they have amazing opportunity to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. They have to really understand why they choose to become a chef to begin with and have a direction of what they want to do with this wonderful craft and what cuisine they want to really mm-hmm. master. And I think, I mean, all the cooking school today are offering an amazing amazing curriculums and amazing opportunity to understand every cuisine, basically, that is available.
So I was thinking about that because as your empire has grown from, I mean, the original Danielle was on 76th Street. It was a small restaurant, but obviously with a tremendous impact. And as you have grown and built other restaurants, you're cooking obviously always very French, but you've branched into other flavor profiles, into elements of other cuisine. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people always talk about food in America is we have great Thai food and Japanese food and French food. How does a young person or even a diner know anything about food? You grew up in a culture of food, of a particular type of food.
It's true, but I've always been fascinated by other culture mm. and other personality in food. Interestingly enough, in the 30 years I've been in New York, 3 of my chefs, 2 of them were Asian, 1 of them is French. And the first Asian one was Sota Khun, chef de cuisine, Cambodian, grew up in France. not grew up in France, but came to France and learned to be a chef while he was not supposed to be a chef at all, and became an amazing chef. And Sota, we worked together at the Régence and Le Cirque for 8 years. Mm-hmm. Then Alex Lee, Chinese-American, who became my chef for also another dozen of years. Wow. And now Jean-François Bruel, who is more French.
Not Chinese, from right? Lyon.
But interestingly enough, I mean, being with Sota and Alex always kept my mind open for, we were cooking French together and we wanted to be really focusing on French cuisine, but yet having always this je ne sais quoi, who came certainly from their uh-huh. background, from their upbringing, and from the fact that they weren't really French.
Right.
And I think it's this exchange, and I think it has constantly been that with Danielle, is that I am the chef, I make a lot of decisions, but I'm not the only one who want to make decisions. I want also everyone to contribute in our work and in the constant evolution of what we do. But we don't try to also become too esoteric and too crazy with the mm-hmm. food.
Well, and I do think that speaks to the fact that your staff, I'm sure you have a large turnover, but you see a lot of the people there yeah. for a long time. You see, I mean, you said 12 years mm-hmm. to have a sous chef. I mean, you have an incredible loyalty, and you continue to develop them and promote them.
Very much. Yeah. And I think that's the plus of having other restaurants, is that it really opened a bridge for them to cross and to be able to feel secure, feel really involved, responsible, and yet start to develop with me personally a new program which they weren't doing maybe in the place they were in the past. Like, you know, a chef from Daniel who goes to become the chef at the Bar Boulou or Boulou Sud, then we are shifting gears mm-hmm. and we are doing things we never did at Daniel, and I think it's very exciting to do that.
I think that's a pressure that people don't always understand if you're outside the business, that you cultivate a group of human resources mm-hmm. of colleagues and friends, and in order to grow them, you also need to grow your business. It's not just you want another restaurant or you want 10 other restaurants, or maybe you
do. I do, because it's exciting. I think when I only had Daniel, you could have anything you wanted. If you wanted a bowl of tripe, if you wanted a pork belly, a braised pork belly, a big slice of pork belly, or if there were many dishes we were doing at Daniel Wu, were maybe more toward bistro mm-hmm. cuisine than really gastro cuisine. But having all this diversification of restaurant, type of restaurant, I can really play in different places.
Right.
My ambition with cooking.
It's the expansion of the cuisine, not so much the restaurant empire, that you get to play in these other areas, these other types of food.
Very much. And I think we treat each restaurant as a very individual and particular restaurant. So there is no overlap. Everyone is really in charge of a program who is not really repetitive among
right.
the other restaurants.
That must be both a challenge and also very rewarding. And certainly as a
much.
Diner, it means I can eat a hamburger at DBGB, and I can have a bistro meal after a show at DB Bistro, and then I can
Absolutely.
Have a lovely meal at Danielle. I'm going to remind people listening that if you have questions, and people are beginning to already send us recipe questions, which is a first for us here, you can call us at 718-497-2128. You can also email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org or tweet us your questions at Taste Matters HRN. And if you're listening to the podcast, which many, many of you do, or the archive, still ask us questions. We'll get to them. We'll either answer you immediately or we'll talk about you on the next show. So how has your cooking evolved in the 20 years that you've been in America? I'm curious.
Well, I think the ingredient also keep evolving. The relationship with farmers, the relationship with suppliers, and get stronger. And I think the cooking is getting a little lighter, for sure. It's getting sharper. With Jean-François and Eddie Leroux, for example, at Daniel, we really like to explore other flavor palette within the French sort of. We of course we think French. It's our DNA, and the balance of the seasoning and the balance of our preparation are to go well with wine, mm-hmm. and to really be able to have a very fresh, crisp, and seasonal character. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, every year we like to sometimes take the palette of ingredient or flavor and reinterpret them all the time. Hmm. And that's how what we do some with the popiel of sea bass. That was a dish when I redid Daniel. We changed the whole feel, the whole look of Daniel 4 years ago, mm-hmm. 5 years ago. And the chef didn't want to do that dish anymore. They say, you know, you're making a turn. I think you should turn.
Enough, right?
Well, exactly. You should let it go. And actually, Gavin Kaysen is doing it at Café Boulou very often, that dish. But I say, okay, then I don't mind if you want to take that dish off. I think it had its life, and it became a classic, right. Interesting. But we will keep the palette of, I mean, at least we will keep this palette of ingredient and flavor, which was the black sea bass, the local black sea bass, leek, potato, and red wine sauce, mm-hmm. and to just reinterpret this in different ways.
We're going to take a quick break and think about that papillote of sea bass. While we're gone, you're listening to Taste Matters. I'm talking with Daniel Ballou.
This song is Big Pants by Rectech on heritageradionetwork.org.
Plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis. We're talking with Daniel Ballou here on Taste Matters. I hope that in that break you took the time to go to heritageradionetwork.org and become a member, because this is our membership drive month. And just like on NPR, when it's a membership drive, we're going to hammer it into your head that we are here because of the good graces of your support, and that there's nowhere else where you can find in-depth conversations with the people who have created the incredible food revolution that we all have the benefit of enjoying. So go to heritageradionetwork.org and join. So, Danielle, one of the things that I'm constantly, probably 100 times a day, asked to recommend places for people to eat. And when they tell me they want to have an elegant, elevated, fancy dinner, and they want it to be as New York as possible, there are many great restaurants in the city, but none of them feels like the center of New York the way your dining room feels. I mean, I don't know if you brought that with you, where that came from, but you can have great food, you can have incredible service at a lot of places, but just sitting there in that room, you feel like this is the heart, the throbbing heart of New York City.
Well, I think it has a timeless. Timeless feel as well.
Yes,
and yet it feels very much today, and that's how I always wanted the restaurant to be. But also, service take a very important part in.
And your service,
in what we do,
honestly, is there's nowhere where it is more seamless, where suddenly the whole table has changed and you didn't see it happen and no one told you their name unless you asked. Or I mean, it's just incredible that the ballet that is the service there.
Very much. And
how do you work on it? How do you do that?
Well, the advantage, I think, is that Danielle is only open at night and it's closed on Sunday. So the crew is very focused on only one service in the evening. And I think that helps us also do a lot of training during the day. And, you know, coordination and confidence in service is very important. And not everyone is equal. So we have to make them not equal, but at least confident.
Right.
And knowledgeable.
Well, and it is that sort of confidence that does, that is sort of the New York aspect, you know, that sense of confidence, I mean, and ambition that you feel there in a way that I think is lacking in some other places somehow.
Very much. And I think it I feel proud of Danielle because it's a real good school for many. It has been a good school for many over 20 years.
That's incredible.
Actually, a month ago, another celebration, the beginning of the celebration of the 20 years anniversary, we did a gala for City Milan Wheel. And I had 25 alumni there, including Gail Simon, who was not in the kitchen, but still was an alumni of Danielle.
Who we love on TV, right?
Absolutely. And of course, the chef, Riyad and Lee from Baltazar, and Harold Moore, and the chef of Benoit, the chef, many chefs who have done very well here in New York in a very diversified way. But they all came that day to cook with me. That was fantastic.
And you've been a tremendous supporter of City Meals on Wheels, which actually James Beard was one of the founders. James Beard and Gail Green founded the process.
Absolutely. And every year for the last 16 years, I've done a gala to celebrate the anniversary of Danielle. And so the culmination this year was to have all the alumni come. But every year we raise, in average, between $600,000, I would say, to about $1 million every year. So
that's
it's
amazing.
Very important. It's a very important cause as well.
And as a city, we thank you. And as a food community, and I'm going to get all mushy here, I think that we owe so much to you because part of what you have done, I think, perhaps it's your confidence or certainly what you've done with your success is you've created a community of chefs. You constantly invite, show up, participate, commit in ways. No, I mean, it's rare. I feel very strongly that you bring it's no small task to bring the community of chefs together in New York City. And I hear from people all the time that where they cook, even if it's San Francisco or other places, there isn't that sense of camaraderie among the food community. They're too small. They're too competitive. Or
sometimes it's true. Yeah, I see that in other city. But I think I'm from Lyon, and the chef community is very important there. It's a family. It's a club. It's a way of living. And I think last night we had a wonderful dinner at Perse, and the dinner was, it's all about friendship. And Thomas wanted to invite friend, chef, some younger generation, Gavin Kaysen and Corey Lee was there. Some older generation, such as Jacques Pépin and André Soltner and Alain Sayac. And chef in between. Alfred Portal and Michael White, and you know,
and you were just there for dinner together,
and
in the
we were just
room.
There around the table just to share a moment together as chef.
I wish I had been a rat in the corner, not
exactly,
a mouse on the wall, right?
And it felt a little bit like this very exclusive club.
Except that it's a club made from hard work and incredible sacrifice in some way.
Very much. And Thomas was saying then, you know, we don't take enough time to see each other and share a moment like that because we all are very busy.
Right.
We all are. We all have many things to do all the time, and we are dedicated to our business so much that we don't take the time to get together. So we are trying to do better with
How
that.
Nice.
And I'm always trying to throw parties to get together with chefs as
yes.
well.
Yes. Well, and I'm sure they are. We will look forward to more of those. Let's actually look forward. You're working on a few projects. You have a new book coming out, Danielle's My French Cuisine.
Yes, that's the first coffee table cookbook I will be doing, and it's celebrating. I mean, it's a coincidence that it's ready on the 20 years anniversary, but we have been working on it for a couple of years, And it's, of course, Daniel today, the food we are doing, and there's a little bit of his story also with it, but there's also some essay on written by Bill Bruford, where I invited Bill Bruford to come to Daniel, and we cooked together some very iconic dishes, dishes who, for me, reflected the past, reflected another century, another time.
For example?
A tête de veau en tortue, which a tête de veau en tortue, it's a calfeds, in what en tortue meaning in a turtle shell. You cook a whole calfed, you split it up and very carefully. Once it's cooked, you open up flat and you refill the calfed with the tongue, the cheeks, the ears and all that, and you mold it into a sort of a dome.
Uh-huh.
And then with that are...
The vegans are loving this who are listening.
And
yeah.
and with that are a garnish of mushroom, of slow poached egg yolks with truffle, coxcomb and crayfish.
Oh my gosh.
And canal of truffle canal. And the sauce en tortue, it's quite spicy actually. You make a sauce with the crayfish and veal bones and vegetable and spice, and it's quite a spicy sauce for a classic French dishes. Uh-huh. But it's good because it's vinegary and spicy, and it really cut the fattiness and the gelatinous of the tête de veau. And so that was a dish which took us a whole day to make. Wow. We did also a chartreuse of game birds, where basically it's an art piece, and it's yet a root vegetable lining a mold, a charlotte mold, and the root vegetable, then there's a cabbage leaf lining up, and then there's braised cabbage, and inside it's stuffed with pheasant, partridge, woodcock, and foie gras, and then another one stuffed with potatoes and
oh my
doves
God.
And sweet onion. and so this entire pie, it's a pie one over the other, which is unmolded and beautiful, the color of the root vegetable, took also another 12 hours of work just to do
12
that
hours
dish.
Of work by some of the greatest chefs in the world. 5 days for you and me at home, our lifetime.
Ask Bill Bruford and say, I don't want you, we are not here to write the recipe.
Right.
We are here to make those recipe, and I want you to just write about what it is about this recipe, or what it was about cooking or making these dishes.
And what is it for you?
And it's a good narrative.
I mean, what is it for you? It seems to me you've just described like a living library. Because
well,
who could do that?
The tête de veau, for example, we go back to the 1850, 1870, and some dishes we even go back farther, way back.
Uh-huh.
We have a canard à la presse, and I was with Anne Whelan the other day.
Yes.
Anne Whelan, who has written that beautiful book. The
Great French Chefs? Or
no,
La Varenne,
the Taste of,
Fatigue,
La Varenne, France, La Varenne and Taste of France.
Right.
And she was at Daniel, and she had a duck à la presse. And she was telling me, she said, well, I have the book, and I will send you a picture of the page where the duck à la presse, the first one, was done in 1370 or something.
Oh my God.
It's incredible.
Wow,
where
right.
she sent me by email the picture of that. It was basically two planks of wood crushing a duck.
Wow.
And they were catching the juices coming out of the plank.
Amazing. Well, you've just in 4 minutes explained why you are practically a national treasure, because without your knowledge and without your desire or your energy and your enthusiasm to do these sorts of things, how would anyone in your kitchen have ever had the experience to see those things, let alone taste them
Absolutely.
And watch it?
And those dishes I wanted to make had nothing to do with today,
right.
Nothing to do with, well, I will make it to a group of friends maybe, but nothing to do with the restaurant. As much as it has everything to do with cooking. And I think I want to do many more of those.
Nice. Well, let's stop on that thought that it has everything to do with cooking. Thank you so much for joining us here in Bushwick. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you, Mitchell.
Thank you for listening. While you're listening, if you haven't yet, or in the last few minutes, go join. Heritageradionetwork.org is waiting for your support. Next week, we'll be talking with Gordon Shepherd. It's too bad he wasn't here this week because he's an incredible neuroscientist from Yale who wrote a book called Neurogastronomy, whose idea that, and he's one of the top scientists in the field, his idea is that flavor doesn't exist in food, flavor is made in the brain, and he's going to talk to us about how that happens, the processes that make that. So it's a fascinating conversation, pertains to all the conversations we have here. You're listening to Taste Matters. And then before next week, I want you to, I don't know, maybe you should start making your own duck a la press or something. I don't even know where to go with that.
Or make a reservation.
At Danielle, right. At Danielle, he'll make one for you.
One of my restaurants.
Let's do that. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.